Gate on his return. Ata then. Durvasasi, the great mystic yogi Durvasa. Saha, he the king. Ambarisha, Maharaj Ambarisha. Dvija Upayuka, most suitable for a pure Brahmana. Atipavitram, very pure food. Aharat, gave him to eat, and he also ate. Rishahe, of the great sage. Vimoksham, release. Vyasanam, from the great danger of being burned by the Sudarshana Chakra. And a chop. And. Sorry. Viksha. Seen. Mene. Consider. Swavirayam. About his own power. Cha. Also. Para anubhavam. Because of his pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. So translation. After 1 year, when Durvasa Muni had returned, King Ambarisha sumptuously fed him all varieties of pure food, and then he himself also ate. When the king saw that the Brahmin Durvasa had been released from the great danger of being burned, he could understand that by the grace of the Lord, he himself was also powerful, but he did not take any credit. For everything had been done by the Lord. So you can repeat, after 1 year, when Durvasa Muni had returned, King Ambarish sumptuously fed him all varieties of pure food. And then he himself also ate. When the king saw that the Brahmana Durvasa had been released from the great danger of being burned, he could understand that by the grace of the Lord, he himself was also powerful. But he did not take any credit, for everything had been done by the Lord. So purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. A devotee like Maharaj Ambarish is certainly always busy in many activities. Of course, this material world is full of dangers that one has to meet. But a devotee, because of his full dependence on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is never disturbed. The vivid example is Maharaj Ambarish. He was the emperor of the entire world and had many duties to perform. And in the course of these duties, there were many disturbances created by persons like Durvasa Muni. But the king tolerated everything patiently, depending fully on the mercy of the Lord. The Lord, however, is situated in everyone's heart. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sanavishtaha. And he manages things as he desires. Thus, although Maharaj Ambarish was faced with many disturbances, the Lord, being merciful to him, managed things so nicely that in the end, Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish became great friends and parted cordially on the basis of bhakti yoga. After all, Durvasa Muni was convinced of the power of bhakti yoga, although he himself was a great mystic yogi. Therefore, as stated by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, in the 6th chapter, text 47, Yoginam api sarvesham mudguten anturatmana shatavan bhajate yomam. Same yukta tamo mataha. Of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. Thus, it is a fact that a devotee is the topmost yogi, as proved in the dealings of Maharaj Ambarish with Durvasa Muni. So, Omagana Timadandasha, Gananjana Shivakaya Chakshur Meditam Gina, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, here the exalted qualities of Maharaj Ambarish are being described, and especially the quality of Tatikshiva, that is, tolerance. And we find in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that the description is given by Lord Kapiladeva of the qualities of a Vaishnava. In other words, how you can judge to see if someone is an actual Vaishnava. Actually, in the ISKCON movement, we're supposed to test our spiritual master in many different ways. Of course, it's not that you do the test. It's like I said before, one takes initiation, the disciple is tested by the guru, and the guru is tested by the disciple. Well, the disciple's test can actually be a test given by the guru or by the institution. But the test of the guru is not that the disciple writes out a test and hands him some papers and says, you know, Guru Maharaj, I want to see if you can answer all these questions, you know enough verses, and you're qualified enough. Or whether the disciple says to the guru, I want to see if you're on the Brahma Buddha platform, so I'm going to subject you to so many tortures to see if you're properly qualified. Stick some pins in you and see if you feel pain. And so that's not really how the disciple tests the guru. The disciple tests the guru by observing observation on the internet. He can put a camera in the guru's rooms, just observe 24/7. You have to be sure, you know, you can't take any chances for this. Most important decision you make in your whole life. So anyway, not really that far. Then the gurus would be rather paranoid, you know, who's watching me? But to see if the guru exhibits the qualities listed by Lord Kapiladeva, and I'm going to talk about these qualities in regard to Maharaj Ambarish and other great devotees. And of course, this famous verse, you know, Tatikshiva, Kurunika, Suhira, Sarvadeya, Namagyata, Shatrava, Shanta, Sadhava, Sadhabhushana. So, we see Sadhabhushana means the qualities of a devotee, the qualities of a sadhu. So we see Maharaj Ambarish exhibited all these qualities in his encounter with Durvasa Muni. I mean, it's Tatikshiva. Tatikshiva means tolerance. And then, that's easy. We don't need to explain that too much. And then, Karunika. Now, what does Karunika means? Merciful. So, the reason Maharaj Ambarish was fasting for that whole period of time where Durvasa Muni was being chased by the Sudarshan Chakra is that it's not simply that he was fasting, but he was praying to the Supreme Lord and doing austerities for the benefit of Durvasa Muni. That's pretty interesting. And I'll talk more about that when I finish with the Vaishnava qualities. Tatikshiva Kurita Surana Sarvadeena. Surit. Surit means in Sanskrit basically good heart. So it also means friend. Like you find Krishna has that statement in the Gita. Bhaktaram Jagatapasam Sarvalokameshram Suridam, same thing. Suridam Sarvabhutanam. So it's the same thing. Krishna is the friend of all living entities, but not just an ordinary friend. In Sanskrit, the ordinary friend is called Mitra. That means your buddy that you play soccer with. That's a Mitra. But a Surit, or Suridam Sarvabhutanam. So an actual friend is one who's there for you all the time, regardless of what you do to him or her. regardless, you may abuse the person, you may yell and scream, but the friend is always there to try to help you. Suvidam Sarvabhutanam. So, Ajata Shatshava. And then also, and you see Maharaj Ambarish exhibited that. And then Ajata Shatrava. Ajata Shatrava means one who does not have any enemies, or whose enemy, literally, one whose enemy is never born. And, of course, as you know from the Mahabharata, that's also a name of Yudhisthira Maharaj. Ajata Shatru. That means, basically, the person who doesn't have an enemy that was born. Of course, others consider that, can consider that person to be their enemy, but the Vaishnava never has any enemies. Is that clear? So, Ajata Shatrava, then Shanta, he's always peaceful. So you see that with Maharaj Ambarish. So by seeing all these qualities in a person, you understand that they're an exalted personality. And there's many examples other than Maharaj Ambarish. I mean, we can go through the whole list of examples. I mean, obviously, Prahlad Maharaj was like that, exhibited the same qualities. Prahlad Maharaj was being basically tortured by his father, Hiranyakashipu. I'll tell you an interesting story. Well, actually, I'll finish that, this whole discussion, and then tell you a story about a picture of Hiranyakashipu. So Prahlad Maharaj is being tortured, and finally Lord Nrsingadev comes and kills his father. And what does Prahlad Maharaj say? He says, when he's asked by Lord Nrsingadev, what do you want? Instead of saying, torture the guy, send him to hell, let Yamaraj tear him to bits, he says, save my father. Pretty interesting, isn't it? This is an indication, of course, of a great devotee, but an indication that he's not interested in retribution. Generally, when someone does something to us that we don't like, we want to see them suffer. Just like in certain countries, they have capital punishment. Capital punishment means where they kill someone who's committed a murder. And, of course, in Krishna consciousness, we're also in favor of capital punishment. But for another reason, not to punish the person, not to make them suffer, but to eradicate their karma. So the karma that they had for killing someone is eradicated by them being killed by the government or by the proper king. So, when you see capital punishment nowadays, it's given as sort of a retribution, getting even. And people, at least in America, they camp out outside of the prison house. They do something called tailgating. You ever heard of this before? Tailgating is when you go with a pickup truck and you put a lot of beer in the pickup truck. And you sit on the bed of the pickup truck, you know, a whole bunch of young people sit, and you drink the beer and you say jai when the person dies. Never heard of that before? That's a famous American pastime. So they're standing outside the prison, or, you know, sitting on the pickup truck outside the prison drinking. And as soon as they see information, the person has been killed. Haribol. Because they don't say Haribol. Because they're not devotees. So that's retribution. Retribution. And it's interesting, in the Bible, the Christian Bible, retribution and vengeance is the same thing. You know, getting even. In the Bible you have this statement where God says, the Old Testament actually, he says, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. In other words, it's not for us to get even with people, or it's not for us to feel happy when someone is suffering. Vaishnava never feels happy when someone is suffering. So Prahlad Maharaj, he actually felt compassion for his father in spite of being tortured in so many ways. And that's a very exalted position to be in, to feel that sort of compassion. And I told you one funny story. I was in our temple in Singatoka, which is in Fiji, and there's a nice display of Prahlad Maharaj, or actually Lord Nrsimhadev, killing Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu is on Lord Nrsimhadev's lap, and he's taken out the intestines, done a nice surgical operation on him, wearing the intestines around his neck. And so some nice people from the UK came in, and I was giving them a tour of the temple, showing them, you know, different aspects of the temple. They'd never been in a Hare Krishna temple before. And finally, they came to that particular picture, which was actually a relief panel, and they were just horrified. What is this? You people are weird. And I had to think very quickly, how to explain this? And I said, well, that man who's being killed, he was a child abuser. And this is the government, you know, taking care of the child abusers. He said, yeah, that's good. So that's a good way to explain Ugra Nrsimha to people who come in for the first time to the Hare Krishna temple and are shocked to see someone's intestines hanging out. So anyway, you see in Prahlad Maharaj's activities, he was extremely compassionate to the people or the person who was attacking him. And you have also Jesus Christ in the Bible, who was saying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead while he was on the cross about the people who had put him on the cross. He said, forgive them, Lord, they know not what they do. Amazing, isn't it? And then you have Lord Nityananda, who was hit by Madai, and he was begging Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to forgive him. It's amazing. I mean, this is the quality of a Vaishnava. That Ajata Shatrava, he has no enemies. Suradam Sarva Bhutanam, he's a friend to all living entities. I mean, this is what we should exhibit. If we're looking for someone to be our, last night we were talking about a role model, someone we want to be like, someone we want to emulate when we grow up, in case any of you have not grown up yet, then we should look for people with these particular qualities. And then, of course, you have Srila Prabhupada, who tolerated so many things and remained merciful to all of his disciples who did so many crazy things. So, to exhibit how one can develop these particular qualities of Vaishnava, of tolerance especially, and Ajata Shatrava, and not considering anyone to be his or her enemy, we can look at the story of Dharma the Bull. Now, this is from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Mm. Dharma the Bull was being basically beaten by the personality of Kali. And he was standing on one leg and urinating. You know, imagine if someone comes and attacks the bulls, the oxen, or the cows here. You know, we're going to get pretty angry. So Parikshit Maharaj, naturally, comes and captures this Kali, the personality of Kali Yuga, who is torturing the bull. Of course, the bull's four legs are representative of the four principles of religiosity, cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity. And there's also a metaphorical understanding of that particular pastime, that these four principles are diminished by the activities of breaking the four regulative principles. These four pillars of Kali Yuga. So, Dharma the Bull is asked by Parikshit Maharaj, who has done this to you? You know, point out the perpetrator so I can, punish him. And Dharma the Bull says something very interesting at that point. He doesn't say, like I would say, get him. Get him, I want to see him suffer. Isn't that, we like to see people suffer when they do something to us. You know, let's say some devotee offends us, and we find out later he breaks his leg. You know, he deserved it because he offended me. One time when I was a new devotee, someone was bothering me, and anyway, he was attacking the movement, so I actually broke my Brahmin thread to curse him. I was just a new devotee then. I was just 3 years in the Hare Krishna movement. It was in South America. That is, I curse you. Because I don't think it had any effect, but... So sometimes devotees, they curse each other. I mean, not advanced devotees. They curse like that. So the Dharma, the bull, said to Parikshit Maharaj, it is very difficult to ascertain who has done this. Now, obviously, you didn't have to have a PhD to understand who would attack Dharma the bull. It was Kali. When Prabhupada comments, and also Parikshit Maharaj comments, that this indicated that Dharma the bull understood the principles of religion. A very interesting statement. Now, what does that mean, he understood the principles of religion? And he understood the ultimate principle that not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if something happens to me, then if it is not a my own fault, that's another thing. We'll mention that in a second. It's Krishna's arrangement. Krishna, it is Krishna doing something. Now, if I do some foolishness, then that is my mistake or my foolishness. Like Prabhupada commented one time, there were devotees driving a car, they fell asleep while driving because they didn't get enough sleep the last night, and they died. And one devotee said to Prabhupada, that was Krishna's mercy. And Prabhupada said, no, it was their foolishness. So if you're foolish, don't blame Krishna for it. Like if you jump off the building and you get hurt, you say, you know, it was Krishna's plan. No, you're an idiot. Why do you jump off the building? You know, that's why we should wear seat belts, you know, different things like that. And not say, well, Krishna's protecting me. I don't have to wear seat belts. I don't have to take precautions. I don't have to wear a jumper in the morning when it's cold, because Krishna will keep me warm. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. You got to do something. But ultimately, if something's outside of your control, then you see, it's Krishna. Now, there's several steps. First of all, you see it's Krishna. That's the first thing, obviously. There's not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of God. Secondly, what is Krishna saying to me? Not only it's Krishna, because then you may get angry with him. Then you want to get even with Krishna. Isn't it? That Krishna, he was such a cruel god, you know. And then you go think about the Mahabharata, all the things he did to the poor Pandavas. I don't want to be a devotee. Actually, this is brought out in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Narada Muni is going around trying to find the best devotee of the Lord. This is the first part of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Comes to the Pandavas, ultimately, and he says to Yudhisthira Maharaj, you are the greatest devotees of the Lord because the Lord is your friend. He stays with you. He protects you. And Yudhisthira Maharaj says, no, one of the reasons why we are not great devotees is that if anyone hears about our pastimes, they'd never want to be a devotee. That's what Yudhisthira Maharaj said. And if you think about it, you think, you know, here are these great devotees, okay, house of luck, they get burned up, attempts on their lives so many times, kicked out of the kingdom, their father dies, their wife gets, you know, apparently disrobed, the attempted disrober. They lose their gambling match, they get exiled in the forest, and then finally when they fight the battle, or their children are killed, you know, Abhimanyu is killed, Ghatotkacha is killed, the five sons of Draupadi are killed, her brother is killed, her father is killed, the grandfather Bhishma is killed. Whew. Let me join a different movement. You know, this is, I just like the peace and love movement. You know, I should become a hippie again. Yeah, that was a lot nicer than Krishna consciousness. So Yudhisthira Maharaj is saying that people hear about all these things, and basically they're not going to want to be a Hare Krishna devotee. That's why we don't tell those stories to people until they get initiated. So, And then you have Queen Kunti prays, her prayers to Queen Kunti, prayers to Krishna, prayers of Queen Kunti. My dear Lord Krishna, please let these miseries happen again and again. Vipada santutasya taksaswa tatra tatra jagat guru. Oh dear Lord of the universe, again and again, let these things happen. And of course she gives a reason for it. She says, what is Krishna saying to us? And there's the second step. And there's a third step too. The third step is, what do we do about it? So there's three steps when something happens to us, good or bad. Not just bad things. I mean, good things are hard to deal with too, because things are so good that, you forget about Krishna. Isn't it? I mean, just like, everything's going well, I feel good, I'm in good health. Explain one method of doing it. Well, let's take the example of a compassionate devotee in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And that example is Vasudev the leper. I don't know if any of you heard about him, if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita. Vasudev the leper was a Brahmin in South India, and he had leprosy. Now that's pretty painful. And when he had leprosy, there were worms crawling in his leprous sores. It's pretty disgusting, isn't it? If you think about it. And so those worms, from time to time, they would just like one or two of them would fall out. And, I try to pick the worms out. I mean, if I had some disease and there were worms in there, I call for the, insecticide or something like that. Just kill them all. I hate them. They're torturing me. I mean, even if I'm driving a car and someone cuts me off, I just hate them. Did you ever experience that? You're driving a car and someone, some nonsense driver, demon. How many times a devotee is driving a car or something and someone does something, gets in line in front of you and you think they're a demon? Right? It's so interesting because we have so many wonderful words to consider people to be our enemies. It's called enemy images, isn't it? It's just so wonderful in Krishna consciousness. We have so many words to hate people with. We are so fortunate. Demon, Rakshasa, Malacha, Meat Eater, I think I'm sure you can think of less intelligent, Karmi, Malacha I already said. So... We are powerful. With our words, we can consider the whole world to be enemies. So anyway, it's quite interesting. So anyway, Vasudeva the leper, the worms fell out, and he just picked them up, said, picked them up. And put them back in. Yuck. I'm even thinking about leprosy or worms, I just I could hardly maintain my composure giving Bhagavatam class. So, the reason he did that, because he was compassionate meaning he was able to see or understand through the worm's perspective. Now, what was the worm's perspective? What was the worm's point of view? It's called taking another's point of view. He was able to see, this poor worm is hungry. He's not really attacking me. Right? He's hungry. That's compassion. That's called what? Para dukkha dukkhi. Considering another person or another entity, not just the human being, another entity's happiness or distress more important than my own. Wow. So he was able to, that's real empathy. To actually understand or attempt to understand Putting yourself in another person's shoes. It's called role play. Actually, that's a very wonderful way to deal with conflicts between people. That you can actually, if you have a conflict, of course, usually you need a facilitator because to help you understand how to do this, then you just take the other person's position. Let's say a husband and wife are arguing. Okay, my dear gentleman, you take your wife's position, now you're your wife. And the husband, okay. And then you begin to understand from the other person's perspective why they act in a particular way. And people act in particular ways, or animals act in a particular way, to fulfill their basic needs, right? Like the worm is acting because hungry. Or someone is acting someone cut you off in the car because, you know, he's in a hurry to get somewhere. Maybe he's late for work. And you've done the same thing many times before too, I'm sure. So someone has some reason for doing things. So when you take this particular tact and put yourself in the other person or entity's shoes, then you're able to feel some compassion for them. So remember the steps I just gave you. First of all, you see Krishna there. Then what is Krishna saying? What are you supposed to do about it? And that's tied in with feeling compassion for the other entity who happens to be doing that or apparently doing that to you. And that's a test. And I think that many of us will have to, or perhaps all of us are going to have to undergo before going back to Godhead, the test of compassion. Because that's a necessary quality to become Krishna conscious. You know, isn't this? We hear every day, Vancha Kalpa Turuvyascha. Kripa Sindhu Yevacha. Kripa Sindhu basically means an ocean. What's an ocean? Ocean means what? Unlimited. Compassion. Unlimited compassion. You're being beaten. So many places, like Haridas Thakur was beaten. 22 marketplaces. And he was simply concerned with the people beating him. Wow. I'm not saying that we have to come up to that platform. That's a pretty high platform. But really to develop this love for other living entities. And of course that love begins with love for the other devotees. Not to be labeling other devotees in such a way that we disconnect ourselves from the other devotees or other persons. So we mentioned before, you know, we have to be careful not to simply put labels on people. And that disconnects us. Especially any label, positive label, negative label. We have to develop deep relationships with all living entities, and that is Krishna consciousness. So on that note, actually pretty good timing today. So any questions or comments? I mean, that's a high bar. That's really a high bar to jump over, as they say in high jumping. Yeah, it's easier said, but it takes practice like anything else. Krishna gives us opportunities to practice, I tell you that.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
Bright clouds. Had a bit of a laugh.
That's good.
I was interacting some time ago with one of your god brothers, Vishwaguru. Mm-hmm. And he's helping with some maintenance things. And I was interacting with another devotee and I wasn't understanding why she was reacting the way she was. And he was saying, she's suffering. Immediately, I turned to the not understanding, to the, of course, not blurting it out to us, she's actually suffering. So then I changed my mood completely, and because of Ishwaraguru, made me see clearly, yes, yeah, okay. So it was really nice to have that interaction with
Ishwara. Very nice. Yeah, that's as a practical example of what we just mentioned. People are simply acting to fulfill their own needs. And then another thing is, they're not acting against us in any case, because they don't see us. I am not my body, at least I'm not. I don't know about the rest of you. Actually, the interesting thing, I was traveling with a sannyasi in the early days, you know, when people were not kinder and gentler. And this sannyasi used to chastise me all the time. And one time he said, everybody else is not you, their body, but you are. You are simply material. Anyway, but, you know, so let's say someone criticizes us. You have an ugly nose. But they don't see us. I'm not the nose, or the ears, or the eyes, or the hair, or anything like that. Because someone cannot see me. Someone who is not completely Krishna conscious cannot see me, so they're not even capable of criticizing me. They are actually projecting, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, when people say something or criticize, they are projecting their own problems on others. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I'm finding fault because I myself am pockmarked with the same fault. Or as, you know, they say in the material world, if you point your finger at one person, you know, 10 fingers come back and point at you. Because we have we should think like that. I have that same fault, therefore I'm finding that fault. And others too, when they're finding fault in us or criticizing us or doing something to us, they're just interacting with their own emotions and needs. And not us. Because they don't know us. They don't know me. So that's another way to understand that.
I have a
question. Yeah, okay, probably.
She has the mic.
I was wondering if you could touch a bit on self-empathy when someone attacks us. Before we can feel empathy for that person, we need to understand that.
Yeah, our own needs. Yeah, that's a good point. First of all, if someone attacks us, defend yourself. I'm not saying you just go, Hare Krishna, Krishna, bring it on. You know, run. As they say, you know, right now we're having training on how to deal with people who come into the temple with a gun. In America, it's quite common. Not, you know, anyway, it's called a shooter, you know. So, first thing you do is run. Second thing you do, if you can't run, you hide. And the third thing is fight. Actually, we had training for all the temple devotees and temple presidents in North America. Because you don't have that problem here in Australia. Everybody is just so peaceful, wonderful, you know, loving. But America, you know, you have these shooters come into basically the malls, to churches, you know, everywhere. You never know. So basically, if we're attacked physically, run, if you can get out of there, hide, or fight. And the way we're trained to fight, it's interesting, I've had training in how to deal with the shooters, is that you hide behind a door and smash their head with the chair as soon as they come in the door. But you don't have to worry about that here. So we should not voluntarily subject ourselves to abuse. That's obvious. And we should make plans to protect others from any sort of physical, mental, psychological abuse, which is really important. So, let's see, the question was, what was the... Oh yeah, what do you have to do before you can be empathic? You have to take care of your own needs, which is what I just addressed. Protect yourself. Protect yourself, and you have to understand why you are feeling the way you are in terms of your own needs, and just take care of them. And you may need a time out in order to do that. Like if someone yells at me, you nasty sannyasi or whatever, you know, I'll naturally feel some pain in my heart. because I need to be loved. So, you know, we all have a need for love. It sounds funny, but we all have a need for love. We have a need for understanding. And so I'll take a time out and just try to understand why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. And then when I'm able to deal with it, instead of sending someone a nasty email, I'll wait a day and then send a nasty... No. I'll wait a day until I can actually, you know, actually deal with my own feelings. And then I can be empathic or compassionate towards others. So it may not... I may not be like Maharaj Ambarish, who immediately, like, got it. But it can be done. We have to deal with our own feelings and needs first. Yes. The point you made is very good. I can see you studying my book. So, yes, pardon?
Last week you spoke of Hare Krishna. Because you talked about retribution, but then you talked about we have to defend ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm feeling it's the end of the class and I'm pretty confused. You know, the leper, if he was defending himself, he might have kept taking the worms out.
Yeah.
Thinking of oneself, so. And then I think of, Nelson Mandela. He was an example of 27 years of incarceration.
Yeah.
He felt that he wouldn't be free if he took any retribution steps. He wouldn't leave that jail if he felt any animosity, you know, grievances towards his captors and so forth. The only way to walk free is to let bygones be bygones and begin afresh and work on, a new fresh level. And then I think of Gandhi and then the Dalai Lama in Tibet, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They've not defended their land, although it's been pillaged by the Chinese.
Right.
And Gandhi was criticized, wasn't he, by Srila Prabhupada for his stance, in a sense. He's passive.
Yeah, well, he was criticized because that wasn't the proper political strategy. That wasn't what really got India free from the British. He was criticized for a different reason. Yeah.
So I guess my confusion is, when is the right time? Because you look at Maharaj Yudhisthira, they took the exile. They didn't rally the troops straight away and go into battle.
Yeah.
They took how many years? 12, 14 years?
Yeah.
So when is the right time to be passive, empathetic, and or take defensive mechanisms into place, you know, when you understand the right maneuver at the right time?
Good question. My answer is you have to be strategic. And Maharaj Yudhisthira, and the pot strategic means you have to figure out what's the best time and what's in the best interest of the maximum amount of people or maximum amount of living entities. And Maharaj Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, they were spending that time in exile acquiring weapons, acquiring power. Like you have the time when Arjuna, he went to the heavenly planets because to get the weapon, actually Lord Shiva's Trishira and other weapons he got. And in addition, he had to get some dancing lessons.
Just humorously, could we assume the Dalai Lama is stockpiling weapons of mass destruction up there in northern India?
So, but I think the Dalai Lama was thinking strategically. Prabhupada is thinking strategically because he's still alive. Prabhupada criticized Gandhi because Gandhi was not following the proper strategy to free India. Prabhupada actually said what freed India was Subhash Chandra Bose and other persons who challenged the British militarily. So that was Prabhupada's criticism of Gandhi. So it's a question of strategy. How to accomplish a particular purpose. And to accomplish a particular purpose, like protecting society or annihilating the miscreants, sometimes it's necessary to go on the attack. And pacifism is not necessarily the best strategy in each and every circumstance.
Mm-hmm. But is that leaving that up to the will of the Lord, who's equal to everyone and actually in control of everything, to take up a stance? Is that not negating the position of the Lord in some sense?
No, the Lord has given us intelligence, as he says in the Gita, intelligence, remembrance, and forgetfulness, in order to carry out his mission. I mean, certain people have the position to do that. Like Prabhupada said, the king has the position to enforce the law, or even enforce capital punishment on someone, because he's not a deva, he's acting in the stead of the Lord, whereas we don't have that particular position. And the king does that to protect the citizens.
So many citizens in Tibet are being beaten and tortured, and their places of worship are being annihilated currently, and the Dalai Lama seems to not have any desire to defend.
I am not here to uphold the Dalai Lama's strategy. It may be the best strategy, maybe the worst strategy. Maybe there's a better strategy. But he's not really accomplishing what he should be accomplishing. Or maybe he can't accomplish what he should be accomplishing. Maybe he doesn't have the means to do that.
Is it true that the right time has to be strategically thought about? Some patience
has to, is required.
To react with a retribution or a streak of retribution without thinking. So therefore the time factor which is Krishna ultimately, should be considered deeply, right?
Yeah, we have to think very carefully. What does Krishna want? Does Krishna want not retribution, but does Krishna want me to act in a heavy way for protection? Or protection of myself, protection of others, or does he not want me to act? And what's the best strategy to accomplish Krishna's purpose? And that's what Yudhisthira Maharaj and the Pandavas were doing. Had they started fighting immediately, right after the gambling match or something like that, then they may not have had the power to defeat the Guru dynasty. I mean, you also had Bhimsen, who got the mercy of Hanuman, and he became more powerful as a result of his austerities. And Nakul and Sahadev, they all did austerities. If you read the Mahabharata, you see they all did austerities to get more power so they could accomplish their purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the first time you're attacked, we would have actually all been, if not slaughtered, been seriously injured, except for the fact that we did have a shotgun.
Yeah.
And one of our directors at the time shot into the crowd, and that was the only way
we were protected. Yeah.
Saved. Unfortunately, the attackers then get to the police station while the charge against
us.
So a lot of our devotees, including I think to that one, here in prison, were imprisoned for something like 12 hours.
Yeah, that's very important. Prabhupada was very disturbed by that. But it was necessary. I mean, sometimes it's important to act quickly for protection. It takes discrimination. But it should never be done out of retribution. That was my point. Yeah, violence is sometimes required. Prabhupada criticized those who advocate extreme nonviolence. Because obviously if a devotee was attacked, I would act to defend them immediately. Good point, yes.
Bringing us back into the now.
Here is
that. Community and timing is everything. We have a time tomorrow. I understand one of the devotee astrologer told me that tomorrow is the day of new beginnings. It's a very auspicious time in the year. So let's please decide what you want to improve in your life, what you want to add to your life, what you want to bring from your spiritual world into this world, and share it with everybody. Request that you do that and just dive right into it. Today is the preparation and tomorrow is the timing.
Very good. Very good. It's like a New Year's resolution, right?
Yeah. Following the two moons, the silver moon of Nityananda and the golden moon of Lord Chaitanya.
Wow.
There's this time now with the new moon
level. So in defense and strategies, yeah, just look at where we are now. We're in this holy place, this special time.
Great.
And take advantage of that.
Fantastic.
Thank you for your question.
Thank you. That's very nice. And on another, we should take every day as a new beginning. Like whatever happened in the past, it sleeps, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The past is sleeping, the future, don't dream about. We act in the present. Very good. So thank you very much. All glory is to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.